It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. European leaders call an emergency summit over a growing migrant crisis. Italian prosecutors have ordered the arrest of two survivors of Sunday's migrant boat disaster on suspicion of people trafficking. The Tunisian captain and his Syrian first mate commanded the severely overcrowded vessel when it capsized with as many as 900 people on board off the Libyan coast. Meanwhile, the head of the European Union, Donald Tusk, Monday called the 28 EU heads of state into emergency session to confront the unprecedented crisis.
The objective of the summit is to discuss at the highest level what we, the member states and the EU institutions together, can and must do to alleviate the situation now. I do not expect any quick fix solutions to the root causes of migration.
That Brussels summit set for Thursday. Federal agents have arrested six Minnesota men for allegedly planning to travel to Syria to join the Islamic State militant group. The six, all members of the state's Somali American community, have been charged with conspiracy and attempting to provide material support to a designated terrorist organization. Andrew Luger is the U.S. attorney for Minnesota.
This group is committed to joining ISIL by any means possible. The men charged today are part of that group. They have spent a great deal of time over the past year trying to get to Syria to fight for ISIL. They have tried to leave the United States from our airport here in Minnesota, from JFK Airport in New York, by bus, by car, and by any means possible.
Officials say more than 100 Americans are believed to have traveled to Syria, including more than a dozen men and women from the Somali American community in Minnesota. This is VOA News. Zulu King Goodwill Zwelithini Monday denied any involvement in recent anti-immigrant attacks in South Africa that began 3 weeks ago in the Zulu heartland and has left at least seven people dead. Zulu traditional leader Mnyinza Zungu says the king has never instructed for any attacks on anyone. Angry mobs were shown on television attacking and burning immigrant-run stores in the port city Durban in the worst such violence since 2008. A U.S. reporter jailed in Iran is being charged with four crimes, including espionage. He also faces charges of conducting propaganda against the establishment and collaborating with hostile governments, and is also accused of gathering information about internal and foreign policy as well as disseminating it to those with malicious intent. The paper's executive editor said the charges carry a maximum sentence of 10 to 20 years imprisonment. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
If the reports are true, these charges are absurd, should be immediately dismissed, and Jason should be freed immediately so he can return home to his family. So we're going to wait until we see some more official announcement from Iranian judicial authorities before we comment further on his case. More generally, let me repeat something that I said before, which is that the ongoing effort to try to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon through diplomacy will not, if it succeeds, resolve the wide range of other concerns we have about Iranian behavior.
The 39-year-old Jason Rezaian and his wife, also a journalist, were arrested in July last year after Iranian security forces raided their home in Tehran. She was released, but Rezaian, a dual U.S.-Iranian citizen, remains in jail. Russia Monday said that its security forces killed the head of an Islamist insurgent group in the rest of North Caucasus region, Ali Askab Kebakov, the so-called emir of the Caucasus Emirate group, was killed Sunday along with four other insurgents during a special operation in the Republic of Dagestan. Human Rights Watch and the Platform for the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights have criticized Senegal's government for failing to protect thousands of boys in Islamist boarding schools from forced begging and torture at the hands of their teachers. The groups are calling on Dakar to enforce laws adopted in 2005 that prohibit forcing children to beg. A census last year uncovered 30,000 boys, many under the age of 12, subjected to forced begging. Ethiopian runner Lalisia Desisa now owns two Boston Marathon titles after winning the 119th edition of the race Monday in windy and rainy conditions. His time for the 42-kilometer event, 2 hours 9 minutes 17 seconds, winning the women's division. Caroline Rotich of Kenya, her winning time, 2 hours 24 minutes 55 seconds. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The European Union holds emergency meeting later this week in the wake of the deaths of hundreds of migrants on the Mediterranean.
Some of the topics that we will need to address as a matter of urgency are how to stop the human traffickers that cynically earn money by putting the migrants' lives at risk.
Donald Tusk is president of the European Union. Guinea's main opposition leader calls for more protests until the government agrees to hold local elections before presidential. China agrees to send peacekeepers to South Sudan, and an Egyptian court will today, Tuesday, deliver the first of many verdicts against deposed President Mohamed Morsi.
He will certainly be found guilty because the courts, of course, are not free. They have become a tool of the current government.
Samir Shihata is Associate Professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and hope and prayer have emerged as forces in the fight against xenophobia in South Africa. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Italy has proposed targeted attacks against people smugglers in Libya to counter the flow of migrants to its southern shores. Rescuers are still searching for survivors and bodies following the capsizing of a migrant boat on Sunday, which was carrying up to 900 people. The incident, one of the worst ever recorded, has prompted the European Union to hold an emergency meeting later this week to tackle the issue. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
One by one, the rescue boats have been arriving back in port, carrying their grim cargo. On the dockside in Valletta, Malta, lines of hearses waited, ready to take away the 24 bodies on board, just a fraction of the estimated 750 people who drowned off Libya Sunday. On deck, a group of survivors looked on as the bodies were unloaded. Hosting his Maltese counterpart in Rome, Italy's Prime Minister Matteo Renzi compared the smuggling of migrants to the historic African slave trade and proposed unspecified action to target the traffickers inside Libya.
In Libya, le condizioni per far la pace con un intervento militare.
He said the conditions to achieve peace through a military intervention in Libya at this time are not met. But, he added, they talked about targeted interventions to destroy the criminal racket that is beyond all control. 200 kilometres south of the Italian island of Lampedusa, the search continues. Hopes of finding more survivors are diminishing fast. Survivors say hundreds of people were locked below deck. European Union ministers meeting in Luxembourg proposed a 10-point plan to address the crisis, including doubling the size and funding for the existing Operation Triton patrol in the Mediterranean. The EU's President Donald Tusk announced an emergency summit of EU leaders Thursday.
Some of the topics that we will need to address as a matter of urgency are how to stop the human traffickers that cynically earn money by putting the migrants' lives at risk, how to step up our combined efforts of rescuing people in need, how to better help the EU member states most affected, and how to step up our cooperation with the countries of origin and transit.
But there are divisions. Britain supported scaling back search and rescue operations in October. British Home Secretary Theresa May emphasised the need to stop the people smugglers.
It is right that we are all deeply concerned at the appalling loss of life that has taken place. But our focus must be fairly and squarely on dealing with the callous criminals who lie behind this vile trade in human beings.
Migrant groups say calmer seas in the summer months will see many more dilapidated boats making the deadly journey to Europe. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights said the deaths of hundreds of migrants off the Italian coast were predictable and called them a result of a failure of compassion on behalf of European Union leaders. One privately run company in Malta launched operations last year to fill a void it saw in locating and rescuing sinking migrant boats off the Italian coast. The migrant offshore aid station, known as MOAS, founded by an American and an Italian family, will restart its operations in May this year. The group's director, Martin Zurep, tells Ricky Stryer that this year they are partnering with Doctors Without Borders to ramp up their ability to search and rescue ships carrying migrants.
This would be a very particular year for two very obvious reasons. The situation in Syria is deteriorating, and it's deteriorating fast. One other reason is the total security vacuum there currently is in Libya. Traffickers feel very much at ease in doing their business. They do their business with complete impunity. There are also a number of sub-Saharan Africans which continue, who have been leaving, again, their country of origin because they feel compelled to leave their country of origin. All this will come to a head. All this is coming to a head in the central Mediterranean. And we envisage this to be a very, very catastrophic year in terms of crossing and in terms of deaths in the Mediterranean. And what MOAS does, and our reason for being, is to primarily mitigate loss of life at sea, to save people.
How often do you go out on these missions, or does MOAS go out on these missions, and what do they find?
Last year, the operation was privately funded by Christopher and Regina Catrambone. So last year, in 60 days of operations, we saved 3,000 people in the central Mediterranean. This year, we will be out at sea as from the 2nd of May, and we will be out at sea for 180 days rather than 60 days.
What are some of those health issues that you guys have encountered in the search and rescue missions?
Last year, we were trying to avoid catastrophic situations, but we still had a lot of situations where people were suffering from hypothermia, particularly towards the end of our deployment in October. So hypothermia, sunburn at the beginning, petrol burns because they are in contact with the fuel that has been spilled on the boat. And then a lot of other problems. We had particular instances, I recall, us coming across a young disabled girl who was diabetic, so that was a huge emergency case. But in general, it all depends on how early you manage to come across and to render assistance. Last year, the first incident we came across, it was a 12-meter boat with 271 people on board. Of these 271, over 100 women and children.
Martin Zurep is director of the Migrant Offshore Aid Station, known as MOAS. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Rome. A Middle East analyst says he believes an Egyptian court will most certainly find deposed President Mohamed Morsi guilty when it delivers the first of several verdicts against him today, Tuesday. Mr. Morsi is charged with inciting the killing of protesters in December 2012 when he was still president. Samir Shehata, associate professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, says Egyptian courts under Abdel Fattah el-Sisi have been a tool for repression, not only against the Brotherhood, but almost all dissent in Egypt.
Well, he will certainly be found guilty because the courts, of course, are not free. They have become a tool of the current government. And in almost all of the trials against Muslim Brotherhood members over the last year and a half, there have been not only guilty verdicts, but as you know, well over 1,200 people have been sentenced to death. Now, only one execution has taken place, but the death sentences number well over 1,200. So I think he's going to be found guilty. This has been the mockery of justice that we've seen in Egypt over the last year and a half. Sometimes the defense has not been allowed to actually question witnesses or present evidence. And so this is not a fair, legitimate, thorough due process system. This is, as I said, a politicized court system against the Muslim Brotherhood and against really almost all dissent in Egypt.
The Muslim Brotherhood has come out with a pre-verdict statement denouncing the judiciary as a tool of repression. And they have called for protests on today, Tuesday. What do you think is going to happen? Because if you look at past protests, there's been some kind of violent confrontation.
Yes, I think that's the case. You know, we've seen protests in the past, particularly at sensitive times and so on, and it's quite likely that there will be protests. It's also likely that there will be violence and clashes between protesters and security forces. And as you know, the situation has escalated over the last year and a half because of the tension, because of the violence used against protesters, because of these harsh sentences and so on. And it could be the case that some of the Muslim Brotherhood supporters use violence against the police and security forces. We've seen that also, significant enough to really rock the country. But it's quite likely that we'll see violence, unfortunately, in the coming days.
There's another charge against the former president that is being accused of spying for foreign powers. How is that possible that a president can spy for another country?
Yes, it's not really possible. I mean, the allegations or the claim is that Mr. Morsi's allegiances were not really with Egypt, but were with these foreign powers. Qatar, for example, or Turkey, or Hamas, the Palestinians, and he's accused of passing on sensitive information to the Qataris or willing to provide the Palestinians with some land in Sinai against Egyptian national interests. All of these things are fabrications, figments of the imagination. There's very little evidence, if any, about this.
Samir Shehata is Associate Professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. He was speaking with me from Norman, Oklahoma, in the United States. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 21st. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Earlier this month, China dispatched more peacekeeping troops to South Sudan in addition to the hundreds of Chinese soldiers that are already stationed there. Shana Vincent reports on China's growing military presence in the region.
Authorities say 130 Chinese soldiers have traveled to South Sudan to join 570 Chinese peacekeepers that were dispatched to the region over the last 3 months. They are seeking to defuse a civil war that has killed more than 10,000 people in South Sudan and driven more than a million from their homes. Rights groups have accused the government, opposition forces, and other groups of serious human rights abuses in the conflict. Chinese state media say that the deployment affirms China's growing global role in contributing troops to peacekeeping forces. Daniel Wagner is a CEO of Country Risk Solutions.
Well, like any country, China is both interested in protecting its interests as well as projecting its power. And that's what's going on in Sudan right now.
For 2 decades after China joined the United Nations in 1971, it refused to contribute troops or money to peacekeeping operations, reflecting Beijing's policy of non-interference. But starting in the early 1990s, the country began joining UN missions and in recent years has dramatically increased the number of personnel it sends overseas. The deployment to South Sudan marks the first time China is sending an infantry battalion on a peacekeeping mission. Chinese state media have reported that contrary to previous Chinese peacekeeping missions where soldiers played supportive roles, this infantry battalion has combat capabilities. Yuan Swin, a fellow at the Brookings Institute, says protecting China's massive oil investment in the country may be one reason for the increase of troops in the region. In 2011, 5% of China's oil came from South Sudan, and some of the worst violence has been in the oil-producing states of Unity and Upper Nile.
I understand from the Chinese perspective, they would like to argue that we're contributing more people, we're contributing combat troops. So based on that simple fact, yes, China is making a bigger contribution to global peacekeeping operations. But on the other hand, when you look at the story behind, you realize that, oh, by the way, China also has significant oil interests on the ground. So China's motivation may not be that altruistic to begin with.
Chinese state media have heralded the soldiers' deployment to South Sudan as proof of the country's new role as a responsible international stakeholder. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Hong Kong.
The leader of Guinea's main opposition, Union of Democratic Forces Party, says protests will continue until the government of President Alpha Condé agrees to respect a 2013 agreement which calls for municipal elections before presidential poll scheduled for October this year. Selou Darlene Diallo says many municipalities in the country are headed by members of the ruling party who were not elected by the people. President Conde has said the country, which is still battling Ebola, cannot afford to hold the two elections in the same year. But Diallo said the presidential election could be postponed to January 2016.
Last year in July, we had a very good meeting with the government. At the end of our meeting, we have an agreement on all the points of the ordre du jour. The day after our meeting, the president said he doesn't want this agreement, and he didn't accept that the government signed the agreement. We have written a lot of letters to the prime minister, to the minister of justice, to ask dialogue for talking about election and the implementation of the last agreement. The government refused, and the last month, the government said that he cannot organize the communal election, and we go directly to the president's election. But you know now, our municipalities are led by the RPG staff appointed by the president. We cannot go to the president's election with these people because they are a partner of the electoral commission in organizing the president's election.
President Conde was in Washington, and he said that your proposal to have the municipal election before the presidential election is going to be too expensive, that the country cannot afford that. What do you think?
You know, when there was a last negotiation between the government with our opposition, we commit to organize communal election before the end of March 2014. The president refused to organize election. Since 2005, there are no communal election in the country. Everywhere we ask him to organize communal election, he refused.
Mr. Diallo, what is the way out? Does the opposition...
The way out, the Electoral Commission has to cancel the calendar, and we will start negotiation, and we will see how we can organize two elections. We can organize in January 2016 the president's election, no problem. But the government cannot say now he cannot organize election when electoral election has prepared the communal election. Everything is ready for communal election. But the president refused because he needs to keep on place the people he appointed from his party to lead the communities now.
In the meantime, there's violence and people are dying. Are you not concerned?
Yes, I am concerned because it's my people who are killed by the police and the gendarmerie. The law of the country must be respected by all people, including the president of the republic.
Selu Darlene Diallo is leader of Guinea's main opposition, Union of Democratic Forces. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. South Africa has been swept by disturbing attacks on foreign nationals. Some blame the attacks on a legacy of colonialism, while others say the economy is to blame. Whatever the cause, ordinary South Africans say they are praying for the violence to end. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg's scarred heart, a song of hope and peace. Xenophobic violence has swept the Rainbow Nation, provoking protests and clashes in the cities of Durban and Johannesburg. Hundreds of foreign nationals, most from African nations like Congo, Ethiopia, Malawi, Nigeria, Somalia, and Zimbabwe, have been displaced. Police have arrested hundreds of people, and President Jacob Zuma has appealed to his nation for peace. But on the gritty streets of the diverse Johannesburg neighborhood of Yeovil, life is a struggle for many African immigrants. Adebawale Johnson came from Nigeria a year ago and has been selling shoes on this street corner. He says he experiences discrimination daily.
They use the word, go back to your country. What are you doing here? If your country is good enough, why come in here? So I really don't understand the language. You know, it pains my heart that my fellow black people, you know, treating me that way.
Many, like these Congolese nationals who fled what they say is increasing repression under President Joseph Kabila, say they have nowhere else to go. They say they are disgusted with their adopted home.
I'm leaving my country, Kabila looking, they're killing me. I'm leaving my country, I'm coming here. Now, some are looking, they're killing me.
We finish on this thing. If it's a soccer, things come here. Congo can't play with South Africa.
We don't want this relationship because it's useless and nothing.
Religious leaders say prayer won't be enough to fix the issues driving the hateful attacks.
To us, I think it's a hatred because of social economic of unemployment that is going on in South Africa.
Jacob Mamabolo, an African National Congress official in the Johannesburg area, says his government is working to right wrongs, but they have a big job ahead of them.
To have reversed completely the legacy of colonialism that dates back to more than 300 years. And I think I'm convinced that the spread of xenophobia that we've seen, it's an isolated case.
He's not the only one who is hopeful. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Madagascar pipped defending champions Senegal 2-1 in a post-match penalty shootout in the final to become the new men's Africa Beach Soccer Champions in Roche Kaima in the Seychelles on Sunday. It's Madagascar's biggest football achievement since independence in 1960. Earlier on, Nigeria thrashed Ivory Coast 9-1 in the bronze medal playoff. Morocco beat Egypt 3-1 to claim the fifth spot, while Ghana overpowered host Seychelles 12-1 to claim the seventh place. Consequently, Madagascar and Senegal will represent Africa at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Portugal in July. Turning to athletics, Africa Championship 400-meter silver medalist Wade van Niekerk of South Africa was crowned male athlete of the meet at the Varsity Cup Athletics in Stellenbosch, Western Cape Province in South Africa on Monday night. He won the one-lap race in 46.08 seconds, which is slower than the 44.91 seconds when he won his third consecutive senior national championship title at the same venue last Saturday. Van Niekerk is satisfied with his performance.
I feel confident. I feel like I've got something in me before the European season. So I'd like to do well over here, leave a mark so that I can go through to Europe with a purpose. I'm in good shape and I can. So I take what I get. And to me, it's all about the win. The times will come. I don't really want to pressure me with times and things like that because I'm scared that leads to me limiting my potential and what I'm able to do. As long as I'm prepared and ready to go for the win, that's all that's important to me. I know where my talents come from. I believe it's a God-given thing. God gave me this challenge, and to me it's all about doing best in what I can do.
That was Wade van Niekerk, the Africa Championship 400-meter silver medalist, speaking in Stellenbosch, Western Cape Province in South Africa. Meanwhile, Caroline Rotich clocked 2 hours, 24 minutes and 55 seconds to win the women's crown at the Boston International Marathon in Massachusetts State, United States of America on Monday. Ethiopian Lelisa Desisa claimed the men's title. Finally, Africa Zone 5 Women's All-Africa Games Volleyball Qualifier gets underway in Kampala, Uganda today, Tuesday. Teams from Burundi, Egypt, Ethiopia, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania and hosts Uganda are vying for the one ticket available to the games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo in September. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Stellenbosch, Western Cape Province in South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Italian prosecutors have ordered the arrest of two survivors of Sunday's migrant boat disaster on suspicion of people trafficking. Authorities late Monday identified the suspects as the vessel's Tunisian captain and his Syrian first mate. U.S. government agents have arrested six Minnesota men for allegedly planning to travel to Syria to join the Islamic State militant group. The six men, all members of Minnesota's Somali American community, have been charged with conspiracy and attempting to provide material support to a designated terrorist organization. That is it for this Tuesday, April 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Zainab Abdel Rahman, I'm James Botti in Washington saying have a lovely day.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Blended sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee it.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or
listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, host Shaka Sali goes in-depth with the Sierra Leonean president, Ernest Bai Koroma.
Join us and we'll be waiting for your calls Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on the Voice of America.